Hello, my universal loves. Welcome back to Black Girl Couch Reviews. I'm your host, Christina. We're back for another episode of Foundation, Season 2, Episode 5, The Sighted and the Seen, written by Jolie Cornette and Jane Eppinson, directed by Alex Graves. I thoroughly enjoyed this episode. I thought last episode was one of my favorites of the season thus far. This episode was really good. I gave it a 10 out of 10. I was thoroughly entertained. I like the character exploration. That's one thing I think I've made a comment about a couple of times, just only from the prequels, of course, is that some of the best things about the show is how they dramatically interconnect psychohistory with the very real, raw human effect of things that are progressing. And I'm glad that we took the time to focus on that, but the pace is just very well done. I never feel as if there's a bad episode in the season and that every episode just connects directly to what they are already putting before, and we're not too far ahead of what the show is telling us. And I like that they even confirm some of the things right there in the mid-season, because hey, we got bigger shit coming. We don't need to hold on to this tiny little secret because there's so much more to come. And I really, really, really like that. Before we jump into the recap, wherever you listen to this podcast, Podbean, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, go down to the rating section, drop some stars, leave a review. My social media will be there as well. If you want to send feedback, blackercouch@gmail.com, or you can leave a comment below. My apologies also because I meant to get this out last night, but Bald Move and Pete Peppers were doing a live stream last night and I was all up in that shit. So go check that out on YouTube. Typically, I don't listen to podcasts until I record my podcast for that episode. But last night, I had already written my notes, so I felt confident going in. But other than one good, which came from the chat section, actually, theory, there wasn't too much to other than further extrapolate one's feelings on the season thus far. Let's jump into the recap because I got to drive later on today. Flashback. Harry convinces Raish to kill him, telling him he knows what's at stake. I hate what you've done to us. And he says, I know it'll help if you're angry. He doesn't say he's angry. He says, actually, I love you. And instead of Harry saying, I love you too, son, he says, I know that too, son. There's an emotional distance to Dr. Seldon, maybe a missing part of his humanity after his own traumatic losses of his life partner, Yana, of the child that they lost. Could Callie have placed him in a human body to essentially reconnect him with exactly what his decisions have been? I don't know. These are all suppositions. I have a lot of them in this, and there's no answer for it. These are just questions I'm wondering about. Because, of course, I don't know what would be the reason or the purpose for her wanting him to reconcile his past, his decisions for psychohistory versus the man that went through 138 years reassessing all those decisions and losses and being absolutely driven insane by it. Maybe her idea of putting him in a human body was a way for him to maintain his sanity. He doesn't want him to say goodbye to her, meaning Gail, because he doesn't want to implicate her in this. And what did Raish do? Put her in the cryopod meant for him because she sensed what was happening. He wakes up, Harry, on the ship, recalling the pain of being stabbed before Raish approaches him. Of course, he didn't know the plan went off shit after he was stabbed. He was already bleeding out. But he knows once he's approached once again by Raish that he might be in a dream. But Raish says, this is not a dream, and I'm not alive. Does know how he died, though. So how did he get that particular memory of him being shot out of an airlock? Oh, maybe he just watched it on the ship computer, like Gale did. Ghost Raish says, you got everyone fooled, thinking that you care about them, but you're really just a soulless bastard.
Don't be a bitch.
It reverts back to my comment that Harry Seldon, aka the Prophet, like I like to call him, saw people as pawns, people who needed to be moved across the chessboard. And that is what essentially Gale is upset with him about, which I pointed out in the episode where he consistently blamed her, which she does have some degree of culpability. But I think I've already made my case for why she's justified in her feelings. Raish says, this is why you will fail, because it's all just points on a graph, and you don't care about who lives or dies. Harry says, I did change the plan, but that plan wasn't changed with Raish fully knowing all the ins and outs of behind that, right? Because when Empire, and I have to take my book knowledge out of this one, when Empire banished them, I don't think he considered how his presence would affect the mission. I don't think he intended to have the Empire kill him at that moment so that he wouldn't have to deal with this. I think in real time, when he was in that garden, he started to realize exactly how this could go wrong, and he pulled the trigger on something that wasn't supposed to be pulled at that point. And then you had Raish being like, what do you mean that psychohistory is incomplete? Because the only other person who could read psychohistory was Gale. So Raish has been following Harry in absolute blind faith. But then again, you have this scene, and I'm like, well, maybe Raish did know a lot more, but then why be surprised when she said how incomplete? Ultimately, Raish was supposed to escape in the pod. He didn't do that to get his second part of the plan, because he was supposed to begin the second foundation, my guess, with the help of Harry Seldon, and that he didn't know all the ins and outs about what exactly is in that prime radiant. He leaves the comment, I was your son and you let me die. You and I both know it wasn't the first time. So this lingering guilt he feels regarding his other child's death with his partner Yana is something that Tamala, which we later meet, in particular, is something the Mentalics use to emotionally manipulate. And I think that's a good pin to put in that. Just the whole idea of our first introduction to Tamala is not the one that we even see from a, what's the word I'm thinking? Self-preservationist mode of, oh, of course I'm going to, you know, you crash landed here. This is a safe haven. I gotta protect it and my people. I can, you know, try to figure out what the fuck it is that you guys are doing here by invading your mind. But she kind of takes it a little step further. Actually awake, he pierces his skin with the exact knife he was murdered with. And yep, he bleeds, but apparently has balls of steel not to flinch at that incision. I love Salvor's very nonchalant commentary. Do you know how you got a body? No, I don't know how I got a body. She cloned you. While he doesn't recall what happened in the darkness with Callie, it's apparent he registers as human, whereas Callie did not on the planet. She claims to be a representation of the Prime Radiant, but Gail knows that she's lying because she felt awfully solid to me. Salver also isn't concerned at all about Harry's clumsiness. There was a lot of, "You okay, Harry?" from Gail. Whereas Salver's like, "Well, this is what happens when you don't have legs for a century." Speaking of centuries, the genetic dynasty, after a year and a half, have a rival.
There can be only one!
Harry points out the irony is not lost on him. Harry felt chastened in this scene, right? He lost his larger-than-life element as the prophet, as just a computerized digital version of his consciousness. And now he is a, not feeble, but he's definitely placed back into his humble form. He's also possibly missing some memories because he doesn't recall the transformation. Salver can't stop popping off shots. Someone wants you flesh and blood again, and after all that trouble you went to, turning yourself into an idea.
I'm not judging. I'm judging a little, I'm not gonna lie.
It's true, though. As a clone, he feels as if he's arrogantly superior versus as a religious status. He's a martyr for a bigger purpose and idea. At some point, we know the Foundation is going to stop worshiping this man. Who knows if this is the inciting event? Keep in mind, Polly made a point when losing faith in the prophet that his doubt regarding psychohistory never faded. The team are caught up to the fact that the Foundation also has spread all over the Outer Reach by using magic and religion, with Harry pointing out it was bound to happen. People love to kneel.
Amen to that shit.
They approach Ignis that hasn't been inhabited since Empire abandoned it 1,000 years ago. There's diverse life, but no humans. So who is calling them? Salver has to land them amidst a system reboot when they enter atmosphere that causes Harry to ask questions.
Shut up, bitch! Oh my God.
Gail already know when a black woman is stressed, do not ask me questions. I do love her bossiness. I mean, the idea of telling the prophet to shut up. I don't need you right now, nor am I going to answer your questions right now. It's not every day you get tell a god to shush. Before crash landing, Salver sees a light and immediately goes to check the perimeter with her trusted gun, because this is what she knows. This is what she does. She didn't hesitate. Whereas Gail's over there trying to nurture check on her and Harry's frail body. But he points out pain is a little exhilarating. Salver's like, yeah, in small doses. While Gail wants to protest everything that Salver is saying for going out and checking the perimeter, it all makes sense. You stay here, diagnose the ship. I'm gonna make sure that we're safe. And since you don't know how to use this rifle, Harry tells Gail not to let what she saw in her vision affect her. There is an interesting relationship between these two, and I am looking forward to more development because I really like what we got a little bit later on. On Trantor, Queen Sereth and Rue get nothing from Markley besides the attack happened in the king's bedroom. So Sereth decides she needs to continue her inquiries by looking around there. Rue doesn't like the idea of the shy, sad Princess Sereth pimping her body out for information, despite the assurance that she would only give what she chose to. This is a different interpretation of who this person, well, it is a spoken acknowledgement of who this person may have been before. And I think the sad part may come more from the sadness of her tragedy and the moments after that than her being sad before. I think she may have been shy and probably a little ignored but she seems to have had a, she does have a genuine love for her family, and she is angry and vengeful for what happened to them. Despite being far from the throne, she seems to have had some skill set driven into her from Rue about how she can handle power. She's not absolutely by herself in this. Because she's right now she's running circles around Day. I don't think if it was any other day, she might have been, like, if it was season one Day, I don't think she'd be able to run these circles. But that's what happens when... But then again, that other Day may never have murdered her entire family for this to even be something on the table. The question is, once that information is secured on his culpability, what kind of consequences can she enact? I know that Dominion is clearly a force in the Empire, but he is Empire. He has enemies, but he also has a huge backup of decanted, or backup of that can be decanted of himself. Something even that's brought up in this conversation of, I wonder if he decanted himself. My only worry is who is watching her. Someone has to be with them all out in the open like this. And I still think Dawn is too quiet. Also, in season one, they did allude to them being at least under the scrutiny of others that have the capability of becoming a bigger problem for him. This all leads to one of the more hilarious scenes of... There's a lot of good humor in this episode, but this was one of the funniest. Demerzel walks into the bedroom to a little, not fluttering, but certainly insecure Day, immediately saying she wants to copulate. So that's cool. She's like, well, you know, you wanted a real alliance, so this is great. Everything's going in the right direction. She reassures him. He's the manliest of men, despite only being accustomed to Demerzel's robotic charms. And she has to get him ready and horny so that he could be prepared for his encounter with Queen Sereth. I'll be close. And he was like, okay, he's such an overgrown child. And no, she didn't say think of me before fist pumping him up. But he needed a bro in that moment. And she morphed into exactly what he needed from her. And I think that adaptability is what maintains and has maintained her control for so very long. But she just has an additional, I think, kind of, and this is minor book spoilers, but I do think in the book, Day very much is always fully aware of the power imbalance between him and Demerzel and wants to find more agency to counterbalance this. Whereas knowing what we know at the end of this episode, the last Day and this Day have fully relinquished all of the controls to her without even checking to see, you know, what's even in the report files. Day proceeds to drape himself on the bed in a teenager's poor imitation of sex appeal and confidence, blaming the hastily repaired walls and Muriel once Queen Seraph shows up and starts looking around on mold and parasites. Because he didn't have enough time the day before she arrived, or the day of her arrival. I'm going to say the day before she arrived. Yeah, no, because the next day, Ruth says they had dinner. So, yeah, the day of her arrival that still trying to figure this out. It's something. And he goes, thank you. He does not get her sarcasm at all. or the ego behind, oh, we replace this Muriel of your face every time there's a new one of you. What? Such a waste of resources. The rings were started by the current Dusk, who decided to paint because he was that bored, with the current day finishing, not to be invisible as Dusk had intended, but to be seen by all so that the people know they're living because he wills it.
Oh, hi. Thanks for checking in. I'm still a piece of garbage.
Really, it's like Demerzel skipped teaching this one altogether, even proper manners. That's not something anyone wants to hear and think it's sexy. You're supposed to be courting her into marriage, and here you are talking about the thing she pointed out was basically your tiny prick trying to feel like it's a bigger dick than it is. And you admit that this sign that is meant to be, well, maybe that's what he was going to say when he got interrupted. Because remember, he was going to rebuttal to that. And this is his long-awaited response of, it's supposed to be my imposing will of God. She peeps his aura, like you wear that to bed even when you're intimate. And he's like, yeah, like duh. He doesn't know that she knows that he doesn't wear his aura when being intimate, which is another sign of how, I hate to use the same word, but thoroughly insecure this day is. He's not nearly as confident even being intimate with someone. He has major trust issues. She flirts with the idea of spanking him with some paddles encrusted with his royal emblem, and he agrees to order some, but when she climbs on the bed and on top of him, he starts giggling like a nervous virgin, even telling the same joke. He doesn't want her on top. That's the spot reserved for Demerzel. However, when he tries to get her gown off, plus he wants to dominate her, whereas Demerzel dominates him. When he tries to get her gown off, it's a fumbling mess before he realizes he's not even erect anymore.
Oh, that's awkward.
Do you want me to? Don't talk. Don't speak. Don't speak. No. Lee Pace was great in this scene, by the way. Absolutely great in this scene. The facial expressions, the mannerisms, everything was done to perfection. Even the don't talk and the looking down and trying to get the robe over him, like, because he knows, like, physically, I am the sexiest man on the planet, right? I got the sexy little earring because I got my midlife crisis going. My body's great. I can even kick ass if someone came in here. You don't know my skills, woman. But where it matters the most, as in this romance department, he's absolutely out of his element and he can't cover it up. No, there's no amount of empire. What's the right word? Bull huffing? That's the one that came to mind. That he could do that's going to talk him out of this embarrassing thing between them. She even lets out a little giggle. And then he points out, well, you've done this before. And you had a lover. And I know he died in the same accident as her family, which is interesting in itself. So not only did she lose her family, she potentially lost someone that she loved. And love is something that is brought up this episode. It's also something I think that despite all of the days or the Kleons wanting to believe they don't need that, it's something they find themselves lacking. She points out he would know a lot about her family in the final days of her life. So he points out how she didn't want to fuck him, but find out how he survived so that she can, even the scales, with her implied accusations by being the ones that sent the assassins after him. Seraph, not easily tipped off her game, admits, okay, yeah, I was snooping around. Like, you can tell the truth without telling the whole truth. Yep, I didn't really want to have sex with you. You're right. And you're right about me looking around, but my purpose was not to catch you out about killing my family. No, it was to ascertain my own safety, because I'll be living here. And you may not understand the value of that. How could you, when all you ever do is talk to yourself? And you haven't found the culprits that are responsible, despite tearing Trantor apart to find them. She tells him, if you can vow to find the traitors and assure my well-being, then I will accept your marriage proposal. Because he throws it out there, like, are you going to accept my proposal or not? Because now I can't let you leave the palace. And she even points it out, like, oh, yeah, so I'm not going to accept your marriage proposal? Like, you're not going to kill me? Simon death warrant, are you stupid? So she accepts. And he says, now leave. And as soon as she was out of the room, he looked like a kicked puppy. He has no idea what to do with Queen Spicy, but he likes her. That's the weird part of it. Because it'd be one thing if he did it. I think that makes the whole thing a little bit more, I don't know, spicy. Demerzel says she didn't hear all that yelling.
Lies! 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 Lies!
He's like, she accused me of killing her family. I accused her of killing me. It got heated. We're engaged. Best wishes. And the killing of her family, there's no trail back to you. I made sure of that.
What? What the fuck?
That's fucked up.
Wow, just drop that bombshell. Right there and then, that he, in fact, murdered her entire family just so he could get control of her kingdom by marrying her. Wow, that's a lot. That would be a lot to take in. Curious, as soon as he brings up that mayhap Seraph is a little too smart and not above making her own plans, Demerzel turns into the sex kitten he likes so much, eagerly dropped that rope to get some because he was unsatisfied. More like he couldn't get any satisfaction if he tried. I found that a little curious timing. Meanwhile, Rue is in bed with Dusk because they both had late night tears planned this evening. Watching a much more comfortable, sexually exuding, charismatic Day, who sweeps Rue off her feet, even turns off his aura when he gets intimate with her, compliments her. They're watching her memories of the day they met in Gossamer's Court. He left a bite mark on her shoulder that's so penetrating that she still has it after all these years later. There's something possessive about that in a branding, marking, territorial, but not necessarily romantic way. I mean, it can be, but it's just a different kind of romance. But then it makes sense when you see their initial meeting of her playing a game and refusing to look up at him, which captured his attention. That's what I was saying about Spicy's approach, except now I'm thinking maybe Day isn't the one she's truly courting. As I'm reminded, Dawn was watching Seraph upon her introduction and she refused, despite his very intense stare, to look over at him. Rue remembered taking Dust's hand and then nothing else, just on a transport ship with a full bank account and a bite mark. Very tactfully, she brings up that a memory erasure wouldn't be noticeable, and since he has the ability, wouldn't he cut certain memories from his history? And that's also sad, because then, like, how would you ever access those? Well, you know, they're in the memorial with the rest of my audience. Let me just give you this spoonful of information you'll need to use later. She admits she would never choose to edit her regrets because at least she will remember everything. Like, that is true about life, though. Your life is supposed to be the successes as well as the failures. And if you can't remember the failures, then how do you stop yourself from making the same mistakes? It must be nice to trust your own memories. That little seed of doubt woven artfully. I think there was a conversation of whether she did that on purpose. I'm like, yeah, no, she did that. They're definitely both working on their perspective people. He feels regret over Rue, at least the feeling of having something that was special, a little different than everything else that happened in his life. Or maybe he just misses that version of himself. I think it could be a combination of both. Back on Ignis, Salver gets a surprise. It's none other than Hugo that gets the drop on her with a full explanation on how he managed to still be alive after all this time, admitting he simply followed her into cryo sleep and then tracked himself with the beggar because it's still a ship. And he got here 2 days before her. They reunite. It's sweet. And I didn't believe it for one moment. Not for one fucking second did I believe that this was Hugo. I'm like, nah, Hugo did. Even though I don't think it's more possible for him to be alive, which is why this scene works. But it's too many people, even though we know that he actually has been cryo sleeping over the years, but he left his ship, unless he just really found another ship. Like, why wouldn't you just go to cryo sleep with her on his ship and say, where you go, I follow? Why would he need to go through all these hoops just to find her? I would have been like, after a couple of years, I decided to go looking for you. That would have made more sense to me. Back on the beggar, Harry tells Gail, I'm sorry. I'm very shocked that Gail didn't have a stroke at Harry's admission. He realizes he was kind of cold earlier, and she tells him, if you're not going to help me with my situation, your useless opinion can be kept to yourself about thinking about it, because how can I not think about it? He affirms all her visions don't come true, like with the wave, and psychohistory isn't even set in stone. That's the whole purpose. But even if they could save her, should they? I just thought about something. What if seeing Salver die isn't something that happens in that particular moment? Maybe that's an implanted memory or just a recalled memory that Gail was able to access, or that the mule used against her in that moment. Because I keep thinking, why would Salver survive? Why would she go into another cryo sleep? Maybe she dies another time, but I don't know. Memory seems to be a theme, and that was a thought I had. She doesn't just want to give up, and he points out, hey, she's my granddaughter, so I do have a dog in this fight. And while I don't know if I would have changed things if I had known, I would hope that I would. Even though an embryo is another proposition to a person, Gail admits she and Raish wanted this child, but hadn't decided because Raish knew he was leaving. He tells her to cherish the moments that she has with her now, because everyone doesn't get that. And I think that's him. And he will eventually talk to her about his own loss of a child. When Salver and fake Hugo show up, Harry tells Gail to hide the Prime Radiant and don't tell me where it is. That's going to be important somehow. He refuses to allow Hugo in, noting that he has a 3 kilogram difference. While Salver thinks he's crazy, he convinces Gail too late that something is wrong. She realizes that they have incoming people diverging on the ship. And the man pretending to be Hugo transforms into someone else, taking Salver hostage. All three are corralled and knocked down before being told to unthink their minds, putting them unconscious. Notice that a couple of them needed to be here to do that. Back on Trantor, Seraph tells Rue the marriage thing is done, and she always wanted her to be close to the throne for the advantages, so you got that. She's not bitter about it. She just wants the one that killed her family to die. Sarah's pretty smart, though. She learned that they used razor swords and that there was blood spatter, which means someone got injured, which means someone had to get treated. We need to find that person. I'm like, I'm sorry. I didn't know Seraph did CSI work in her spare time. Rue reports what she learned, that the clones are audited too, and where those memories are stored. And while they can't get Day's memories, Markley can't, they sure as shit can get someone who attended him. So Markley goes to the Keeper and requests those memories. And because Day is an erratic, chaotic monarch, this aggressive overanalyzing fits with the request. Dusk learns at twilight from Demrazel that Day has the power to audit not only his own, but his and Dawn's memories.
Say what?
I'm not sure she needed to volunteer the second part. He thinks they would share that authority, but unfortunately Day took away their privileges after the attack. What happened to Demrazel saying she can tell if memories have been altered? Doesn't seem like she followed up on that. And has kept them despite knowing they are innocent. I love how she stays silent in the shadows as she's always been, allowing him to connect the dots he predictably will, which is how would we know that Day is messing with our memories. Well, I would tell you if that was happening, and my memories are unalterable, something I think that also is important. That Dusk is going to use. It's like you're giving someone information they might need to put in their back pocket later. That's going to be used against Day and Dim. Serves the Empire, as she points out, not Day. I serve all you guys. So I'm not partial, despite fucking that particular Day. And she's so blatantly, apparently honest, it's unfathomable she's lying because she isn't. She's giving him the rope to hang whoever finds themselves in the noose. He knows from Rue he wouldn't know if he had a memory missing, but she pats him on the head with, "Day would tell me, and I would tell you, because I serve Empire." He already said that. "I am always here as I've always been, but maybe she wants out."
I want to break free.
My favorite, very favorite episode of last season was her and Zephyr Halima, and that last conversation was someone she respected absolutely to the point that she kneeled before her, to Day's absolute horror. And this person tells her, "You have a soul." She said, "Maybe if I had a soul, I can go against the Empire." And she says, "I don't know how, but you do have a soul." She still wears, and I said I was going to look for that, she still does wear her salt bracelet. So she still has her religion. And that is where that last scene of her ripping her face off, and this Demrazel makes everyone side-eye her, because those moments were important character beats for her as a person. And to just simply toss all of that toxic emotion aside and just continue on your job, your day job, like nothing happened, when you stripped me of the one thing that I did even have my own individuality here, the only thing I could find individuality in, you simply just shat all over it. And I really think that was a turning point for her. And with the idea that she is a person, she is a soul, she's worth, she's not just a servant, a slave to her master. Dust leaves the conversation with Brother Day takes a great deal upon himself, and he knows who's really running things. Markley brings Sarath and Rue the evidence they need. Another small detail, she thanks Markley every time. She always shows him, granted, you know, she's getting this person to sleuth for her, but I do think how you treat people matters. And I think that Dawn and both Sarah are fully aware of it's easier to get people to your side with honey than with a sting. A nice detail, though, connecting her and Dawn. Of course, the video captures more than who was injured, but the truth about the nature of that person that was harmed, which is that Demrizel is banned machinery, closest to the throne, working on behalf of the Empire, and sleeping with said Empire over generations. If there was a war, just imagine learning that after, like a robot war, after winning said war and defeating the most advanced remnants of that technology, that one has been running the galaxy for all of this time under an oppressionist rule. That's not going to go down well. So yeah, her learning that secret is a big deal. Theory, Dawn and Dust keep the kibosh on how this may end. I think that they may keep the kibosh on Demrizel because they don't want to destroy her, because I think they have a genuine love and respect for what she's done. But I think she might be forced retired at the end of the season by Dawn and Dusk in exchange for Sarath allowing them to try and murder Day for treason and agreeing to marry Dawn. That's my end of the season prediction. Probably incorrect because it sounds way too straightforward. But I don't think anyone would really want that secret out there about Demrizel being a robot. Because that means everybody in the universe, in the Empire. And now you have this foundation thing. Oh, my other crash theory that I had was that now that he's engaged in this engagement is based on him being able to find the traitors. And now we have fucking Polly and Constant on their way to Empire to offer to begin peace talks, or what do you want to say? Try to entice them, sell them on the foundation. Why? I got a brief suspicion that Day may decide to blame the assassination attempt on them, which would solidify his marriage and turn everything in the direction that he wants to. And now that we know the type of person that he is, he wants to go out like Alexander. He's been thinking about it his whole entire life. Oh. Yeah, he is very much being set up for a fall. Dawn and Dusk go see the OG version of Cleon. Some people are saying that this version of OG Cleon is alive, but no. The point of the clones is that death is inevitable. But the replication of one's organic matter can thrive, can live onward. So why would the OG version still be alive? That doesn't make any sense. Dust admits he never talked to the man due to humility, and Dawn likely always creeped out. Never approached this great-grandpa to the 12th power. This is another really funny scene. Dawn being so over that weird ass prayer to inquire from the one. And then he goes, well, what about if our genetic drift messes? Don't bring that shit up. He will drop the ceiling on all of us. This is an August memory. And he even says it's an August memory. That's another reason why I'm like, sometimes. We can get a little out of control with theorizing based on just simply not acknowledging the information given. I think it's funny that they have a "What Would Cleon Do?" August memory, though. And his "When Nothing Happens at First." It's my palm. Put your hand back up there. That whole "We thank you for our lives" bit, that's a bit much. That's a bit much. It sucks. You're continuously an off-brand of a better, superior version of yourself that looks as if you are a inferior version of himself. When they wonder about the design of this much power that Day has concentrated being put in one person's hands, they're told it's accounted for. Even Day's erratic parts of our persona, because they're fully aware that they have a megalomaniac side to themselves. But I think that it's supposed to be kept in check. I think that's the purpose of the clones. Day is supposed to be there to focus on raising, tutoring, inspiring Day. And Dawn is supposed to be there to micromanage and offer the wisdom to Day. But Dawn hasn't been able to do that. Or Dust hasn't been able to do that. And Dawn has been ignored, as far as I can tell. But this is interesting that he says it's accounted for. And he doesn't tell them that they should worry about this. You are to remain united or you dishonor our memory. And that is the whole purpose of this. Otherwise, I'm about to fuck y'all up. That's kind of what was implied. Dawn's like, what is the point of this question and answer when all you got is fall in line followed by the deuces? Long live and fuck off. Next, they go to the Keeper to see their metadata of their memories to compare with all 17 of the Cleons that have come before to see if there's anything missing. The Keeper very much was not feeling that request. Quack, 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 quack. And they unwittingly covered for Markley. Dawn wonders if they really are in trouble, like it's the Empire. The Empire can't fall, right? Dust remarks how it doesn't feel like they're at the top of the food chain around here anymore. I should beat the shit out of this guy, but he doesn't even do it. Like, he doesn't even make the threat. He needs him, and he knows he does. While they feel too big to fall, that's exactly what is happening, which leads to a conversation regarding Emperor Algren on the Mirio in the background from pre-Cleonic times. He was a traitor per the green stroke added after he died for being so. He was a betrayer. They tried him for high treason. Note the woman next to the throne. Another weird thought process. Could there be a robot pantheon that serves different dynasties until they collapse before another one takes over? Just throwing that out there in the universe. Dusk is thinking of his own legacy, realizing in that room with his ancestor that all of this has happened on his watch. He allowed Demerzel to pacify the galaxy for him instead of handling things himself. He relinquished a great deal of power. That Day, when he was Dawn, always resented him for his lack of greatness, no competing with the other clones to outdo their own accomplishments. They even fell into stagnation of the same cycle. Whereas Day's like, nah, man. We supposed to be much more competent than this. But it set a precedent that he absolutely fell into. Dawn comforts his granddad. You're not dead yet. Your legacy isn't set. When a man gets old, he doesn't care about what he remembers, but how he's remembered. He thinks that Dawn may have what he always wanted, which was a life and love. Which goes back to my statement of they must have no idea the full extent of Day's plans. This was an oddly relatable moment, but kind of another weird situational intimacy due to it, that he can look at himself and be like, I was so beautiful. When they get the metadata, at first they're reassured that, hey, I'm lining up with all the other Cleons that have come before me, 17, 16, 14, 15, and so on, until they realize that the OG had almost thrice the memories they did. And while he was special and did a lot more and maybe had a fuller life, they are supposed to be at least closer to the variation of the man. And it seems there's a critical amount of data missing, a large chunk of their memories. So another weird thought that crossed my mind was when Cleon, the OG, said that it's accounted for, maybe he thinks that there is a point in which I may have gone too far or may cross the line, but that's where Demerzel is supposed to come in, maybe. That's a weaker point to point out, but I wrote it in my notes, so I'm staying committed. Dawn wonders what now. Dust says, or won't do anything until they find some leverage, until he finds some leverage. And that's his goal right now, is to make sure that his younger self at least has the chance to have a future. But he also wants to know what Day is hiding from them. Our trio wake Gail, Salvar, and Harry in a palace that is pre-Cleonic, and belonging to Kandor the Fifth. I love how they casually just drop in these nuggets of history. With no guards at the door, though their weapons are missing, Salvar does give Harry props on his instincts. They follow whispers up some stone steps to a large group of what I am assuming are Mentallics, and then it was confirmed. Surrounded by a girl who calls herself Telembon, seventh incarnation of Pa'a, goddess of light, wisdom, flying creatures, and the second chamber of eternity. What you say? Anyone self-declaring themselves a god is a problem. God, goddess. I died when Harry introduced himself, not even trying them hand signals.
Get the fuck out my face with that shit.
He had no interest of doing that complicated salute. But considering that he intends to use the people she has assimilated as a safe haven for his own purposes, you would think he would play into it a little bit more. Harry is given attitude, though, from jump, with Gail instantly fitting right into the culture. And Salvar, openly hostile, because y'all played my girl's emotions and had her kissing some random ass dude that she didn't even know. Yeah, I'm mad. And I'm glad that she even emphasized that that's what she's mad about. They do give her her gun back. They realize Salvar didn't give her last name, but Telem knew it. Harry figures out she isn't a child, but a woman hiding in plain sight because there's no shadow. And while the real Telembon steps forth to admit to the ruse that she wanted to watch them without them watching her back, she considers the unsighted, which is Harry, that his mentally incomplete mind had to compensate using, I don't know, perfectly sound deductive reasoning to figure out her ruse. she's showing a very clear prejudice. She calls her people not Mentallics, but the Sighted. Salver really isn't drinking the Kool-Aid, but Gale is thirsty as fuck. She's very easily preyed upon, something Harry notices with the similarities to her own past and the rejection by her god and the willing acceptance that Telenbaum and her seemingly altruistic calls lures to her. Gale does know that she's reading her mind, but she does have this ability to find the right buttons to push. But she's not doing it alone, methinks. I think everyone that was in that area congregated so that they could mentally tear into their memories and figure out what they wanted to know. So Salver is right to be distrustful. Harry's definitely right to be distrustful. But Gale is like, well, maybe. Plus, they're called her Mentallics in the future. So she has to believe that she has a affinity for these people. I don't think that Telenbaum's going to be the queen of the Mentallics for very long. I have a feeling that Gale's going to replace her spot by the end of the season. But that means Gale's going to have to figure out what the fuck she can do. Because she hasn't, other than realizing she can see the future. And Telenbaum does say we have different Mentallic capabilities. Hers in particular feel rather more on par with that of the mule. And I could just make that blanket statement. And if you don't know who the mule is, you're just like, cool, whatever. But if you know who the mule is, I wonder if you're feeling that same exact way, especially when they do this sound thing with her voice. There's some type of filter going on when she speaks. And it seems to be at very, very persuasive moments where she needs to convince the other party. And it kind of felt like Gale felt what she was doing, but kind of shook it off like, you're reading our minds. So she says she's tired, and so is everyone else, but make yourself at home. I put out this buffet that you did not partake of at all. Salver said, that shit might be poison. I don't know you or your people. You could have definitely not attacked us at first if you really wanted us to be friends. Once they are out of earshot, Telenbaum reveals her intentions to find and break the Prime Radiant, and that all of them were doing their best not to think about it. But of course, the weakest link knows where it is. There will be no second foundation. I understand why she would not want to be utilized as a pawn and people that are seeking sanctuary as a pawn in the Empire's game. But I do think that the responsibility that is being asked of them with the idea of the second foundation would be something they might feel more inclined to do. It's like, okay, I'm going to give you information so that you can make sure the things that have happened to you don't unfold after the Empire falls. Like, if anything, they're giving them, they're offering them a great deal of power, not only in this however long the Empire has, but after the fall and following into the reconstruction of a whole new world. So, well, initially I can see, because she says we can talk about it. She seems to know what the second foundation is or what its intention is, and she does not want it to happen. But she said it using that voice that I feel like is a controlling mechanism when that sound is brought into effect. I could be wrong. I watched it last night. That is all my thoughts on the episode. Like I said, really, really, really good. Really getting interesting. Can't wait to see where it goes. We do have feedback, which is funny because if I had finished recording this morning as I intended instead of right now at 8 o'clock, almost 9 o'clock at night, Mimi's feedback would not have gotten into the podcast. But because timing is everything, we get to hear what she has been feeling these past few episodes. So let's hop into the mailbag.
What up, Stina? It's Mimi. This is feedback for Foundation. It looks like the last one I sent was from the season opener, episode 1. A lot has happened, and I can honestly say it's all discombobulating my mind. I went into this knowing that I was going to have to really pay attention and really get things going on. So instead of me, like, trying to recap the episode, I'm just gonna talk to you about what I like these questions that I have going on. The first thing that keeps like pounding my mind, like, I understand that it's been 150 years since the last day that we encountered. Even the Dawn, Brother Dawn, is different from the one that we experienced the last time we were like the end of season 1. But what I'm having trouble comprehending is how this Drizelle, how do you say her name? Drizelle, right? I feel like that's how you say it. I remember the last time we saw Drizelle and Day, it was, at least I should say the last thing I remember is she was like, I would even go as far as to say she was kind of disgusted with him because he made her kill her, like, religious icon. Like, I know that's not the right name for it, but she had a certain religion, and he made her kill that lady because she was his competition. I don't remember exactly what was around it, and I am not going to go back and watch to find out. I also haven't had time to look, like, to listen to those recommendations you gave me for the podcast, but it is on my to-do list. As soon as I get my life together, once Derek gets in school and I get my rhythm back, hopefully I'll have time for this. You know what's going on with my sister, and trying to fit my life around that is really, really been a juggling act, and I'm losing, and I'm not even going to lie. I'm crumbling under the pressure. So it's a lot of things I need to get done that I haven't got done. And to be honest with you, when I do have a moment by myself, I'm really not in the mood to watch a show like Foundation. I need something that's very simplistic and either funny or something that I've seen already, because I can't think too hard, because I feel like my life is just constantly thinking, with my job being a job where I have to think all the time. When I'm on a days off, I don't necessarily like thinking too hard, so I just haven't had the mental capacity left to really try and dig deep into the show. But I'm hoping that before you record the last episode of the season, I'll be able to even get my thoughts out. Maybe that's something we can do. I know you were talking about us missing your live. I'm pretty sure I told you I couldn't do it, not that day, but that's neither here nor there. Maybe an open discussion, us having like a back and forth, might open up my mind more. That we can talk about that later. But anyway, I'm pretty sure like she didn't like him, but now they're having sex and it seems like she has caught feelings. And he's an absolute fuckboy. For him to kill someone's entire family just so that he can marry her seems downright evil, is the only thing I can think of. And I still can't even fathom the fact that, like you had this legacy of all these Cleons, and now you're just going to decide that you're going to procreate. You're not even fucking real. Like, how many clones can you make before it's not a real person? And I think we got the answer. What is he? He's Cleon the 17th, because we have the 18th and the 16th are the Brother Dawn and Brother Dusk and Brother Dawn. Dawn is the younger one. Anyway, So he's a 17, and I feel like we finally got our answer. He is even doing stuff to where his older, younger selves are like looking at him like, dang, this man has lost his marbles. He's being real corrupt to the point that Dust is even trying. He's like, we're not going to say anything until I get some leverage. Y'all plotting on yourselves. And that idea in itself is mind-boggling, that they can't even comprehend how stupid that sounds. Like, you can call him brother all you want to, motherfucker, but that's you. That's you. You. And the fact that you feel like he's gone too far says a lot. And he didn't even tell them that he was killing that entire family. So the only people that really know is him and Giselle. I'm going to call her Giselle until, I know it's an M in there, and I'm saying it wrong. I can see the word, but for some reason I can't say it, and I don't even care at this point. But I do like this queen, she's a queen now. The queen, I don't know her name, but in her second hand, who used to be a concubine, I'm talking about, like, that's what I'm talking about. You use what you got to get further your career. I'm very proud of her for, you know, taking her status and making something of it. Because it sounds like you really don't have a choice. If the emperor puts you in that garden, you just got to have sex with him. Empire, I should call it empire. It's crazy to me that we saw the flashback. I think we saw this in season one, but like, it's like a garden of women, and he's just walking around picking them like they're daisies. That's mind-boggling. And then he has the audacity to erase their memories. Like, you just don't know what that man did to you. Like, who knows? And maybe it's better to not know. And granted, your bank account is full, but you're still, he's taking a part of you. And I know it's like something, if it's something that's done traditionally over and over again, I feel like the concept of morals get lost. And if you have someone who basically is saying he's a god, like, I allow you to see these rings because you live because of me, like, in his mind he's a god. If that's the way he feels, then, you know, he's gonna preach that. And we already remember what happened with Harry when the empire didn't want people to think for themselves. So if you're told over and over again, like, you do this, I'm gonna take your memories, and that's fine, like, that, you're not gonna know any better. But to me, that's crazy. Like, you can retrieve my memories whenever you want and just think about me, and I have no recollection. The last thing that one chick remembers of Brother Dust was that he grabbed her hand, and then she was on the plane back to her planet. That is absolute craziness to me. This whole, like, empire thing is crazy. And then we get on the parallel side, they just cloned Harry. Like, so he literally said, I want to say it was an episode or two before, you know, if you get rid of empire too quickly or something like that, that we'll just get another one. Like, so basically, it sounds like they want Harry to be Empire. Like, we're not just going to keep cloning people. If a person is dead, they shouldn't be brought back to life. And I don't understand how that concept is so hard for people to understand. Y'all think Cleon is terrible for him to just be, like, just repeating himself over and over again, but y'all doing the same thing. And I don't know if you can't beat him, join him type thing, like, but we already see Harry's not the best person either. And granted, I don't know his motives. It seems like his are a little bit more pure, but as I've seen in so many other things, it doesn't matter the purity of something, it can always be turned into something evil. I don't know the answers. I can't say, but I can definitely say with confidence that we see what happens with Cleon cloning himself over and over again. I don't think it's a great idea to clone someone else to take his place. Like, that sounds like we're gonna put ourselves in the same position. And secondly, it does sound like the genetic mutations that happened when we last saw it was Dawn, I remember he was colorblind and he hit more of the quails than his brothers did. Like, they all had done seven, but he did way more than that. And they were like, so he was different. And we found out because he was his DNA was manipulated. It sounded like they tried to fix it, but they didn't quite fix it because the older Cleon and the younger version know that their DNA isn't quite exact as the original Cleon, but the brother Dusk was like, don't mention that. Like, so if their DNA is a little off, then Day's would be too, because they're like, Day's came from Dusk and Dawn came from Day, is if I'm understanding this correctly. But anyway, enough about Empire. Let's move on to Salvar and Gale. This is the part where I'm just having trouble comprehending exactly. So where they're trying to build a new foundation or another foundation because this is gonna save the world, and Gale trapped Harry in that prime radiant. But that was just his spirit. But the one that we seen on Terminus was a different one. Like, so how many, is this like Voldemort with his Horcruxes? Are they just all over the place? No one thinks that's peculiar, a little strange, that this man's essence is just floating around in God knows however many places. Even Raish didn't quite know everything that Harry was planning. And him dying wasn't supposed to be part of the plan. But Harry changed it last minute because he didn't trust him. That was something we just found out. So, I don't know. Can Harry be like Empire? It sounds like he might. It might be possible. And I don't know. That definitely makes me weary of him. And I know that, like, at the end of episode 5, with the, what does she call them? They're not called Mentallics. They're called Sighted. She calls them Sighted. That planet of sighted people don't want them there to be a new foundation. And I'm going to have to be on their side. I feel like she sees more of Harry than Gale ever can. And maybe Gale just hasn't mastered her gift yet. Or she doesn't want to see, so she hasn't tried. I don't know. But I know it was like an ominous ending. But I'm kind of on her side. We're just seeing too much of things that Harry has done that I don't quite understand or trust. And because he's not very forthcoming, people that hold truths to me are lying, and I can't trust a liar. When you tell me only some of the information because you think that's all I need to know, to me that's the same as lying. Like, you tell me all the information and you let me decide what I need to know and what I don't. You don't get to pick and choose what information. If we're all on the same team, we should all have the same information, and that is not what Harry is doing. I am curious to know what's going on with the Terminus people. I will say, back to, this was a couple episodes ago, the guy, Hoden, whatever his name is, that got trapped in that little thing, and then the girl and the guy went to after them. Like, first of all, how long do these people on these planets live? Because if Harry hadn't been back in 120 years, how is that little boy still, like, not even, like, a decrepit old man? He looked like he was in his, like, late 50s. But anyway, I am interested in that. And I will say, like, the little spark between, what is her name? I don't know what the girl's name is. Brother, it's gone. But her and Hoden, that was super cute and so unexpected. I don't know why, but I was like shipping them as soon as they made eye contact. She was like really laying it on thick, and I was very surprised. And then when she was like, you know, I don't catch interest in a lot of guys, so I thought we had something special. I was like, bitch, me too. I was really devastated. Like, so this over. Okay. I don't want to keep rambling on for hours and hours, so I am going to end it here, but this is just my thoughts from, you know, so far, but I am caught up now. I don't know when the episodes air, and I think that's what's throwing me off. I thought I was caught up, but then I realized you said 5 instead of 4, and I was like, okay. So I just got to look and see when they air again so that I can be on time. But I will try and watch it when it comes out and then get feedback so that I can listen to your podcast and be caught up, because maybe it'll be some insight in there, because I'm definitely not caught up as of right now. Anyway, that's all. Love, peace, hair grease, and black girl magic. Queen of the couch, Mimi out.
Thank you, Queen Mimi, for your thoughts on the episode. Someone wants to say hi.
Hi.
She just needed to say hi to you. In regards to your feedback, really? I think after the season, like probably, if not episode 10, the finale, or I might do a finale and then we do another podcast afterwards. I don't know. Depends on what our schedules are doing. But yeah, I think discussing it would be, going back and forth would be great. This is a very, very layered type of show, and I like it because I've been having a Westworld type of withdrawal, so this fills the spot just nice. And it's Demrazel. I think in 2 seasons you still don't got her name. You still do not got her name. So just call her what you be calling her. I don't even remember. You changed it a few times. Dem for short. You plotting on yourself. That is the most true statement ever stated. That's the weird part. You're plotting on yourself. But hey, it looks like yourself already plotted against you. All you doing right now is evening the playing field and realizing what exactly he's been up to. As far as Harry and the Empire, I think it's fair to consider him untrustworthy. But at the same time, it's almost the same thing Ford said. You cannot be acquainted with God without also being acquainted with the devil. You pose an interesting scenario. Hey, I deserve as a person, and I think it's a fair, and what most people would say, I deserve as a person to get all the information and then let me decide what to do with that decision. Unfortunately, that's just not reality. And I don't know if to say you're lying to me. Well, I guess if you take it to mean you're that person is straight up lying to you, that's your perspective. But mine would be that they're not lying. If they are lying to me, it could possibly be for your own good. I don't know if I need to know every bit of information. Like if the government was 100% transparent, do you think you would really want that? And even if you are the person that can handle it and deal with it, what about the other millions of people on this planet? I think that sometimes things are kept from you because everyone doesn't need to know. And I think that's a little bit of the misunderstanding about psychohistory, is that everyone isn't supposed to know. Like, that's why Gail understands why they have their back and forth, but they really truly know they're both in a lot of ways right. Because yes, setting up the second foundation should have trumped her emotions in that moment. But at the same time, you being emotionally compromised is also understandable. So I think for him, psychohistory, everyone isn't supposed to know, or it falls apart. So I think that part of not just telling everyone is not a mark I hold so much against him as maybe, I don't know, having more empathy for the decisions he's placed, the burdens he's placed on people. Like, he doesn't take any moment to appreciate the emotional sacrifice. And that's what makes him rather cold. But I think from what the show is stating, he's like this due to his own particular losses. And that has to be regarding his partner and his child. I distrust Tellenbaum more because of her initial approach. You talk about Harry and hiding his cards. She's definitely hiding her cards. One would say she has a right or reason to. Yeah, definitely. But in a lot of ways, so does Harry. It's just, I think that there's nothing wrong with this group. I don't like the look in her eye when she is around this group. I don't like the push of the emotional manipulation. Because she's going right in and you're doing it against people that are not even on the same level as you. So that is in itself makes me untrustworthy. And whatever we want to feel about Harry and himself, psycho history, what he built is in effect the best thing for the empire. Now the challenge is going to be not creating another empire to take its place. But the empire is going down and there's 10,000 years of darkness following it. And if psycho history isn't implemented to shorten that 10,000 to 1,000 years, then the galaxy's fucked. So they know that there's going to be problems. They're just trying to navigate and shorten the life cycle of how bad it's going to get. So, I think that it'll be interesting once you get caught up in hearing my thoughts and my breakdowns, where you're at. As far as the Holber Mallow and Constant, I think they're all right. I just think that they're a doomed pair. I could be wrong, though. I don't know if I'm shipping. I'm not really shipping them. I'm not shipping anybody in this show for the most part. I like the pairings because a lot of people work very well up against each other. So I think that is, I don't know what I meant by this last note, Holden probably. I have no idea what I meant when I wrote that. So we're going to wrap it up here. Once again, if you want to send feedback, blackercouch@gmail.com, you can leave your comment below. My social media will be there as well. Like, share, subscribe. Until the next time, peace, hair grease, and blacker magic.